Henry Jenkins, in your previous work, among many other things, you've explored the idea of a, quote, moral economy, which you define on your blog as, quote, the presumed ethical norms which govern the relations between media producers and consumers. I'm wondering, what are these presumed ethical norms and where are they at the moment?
Well, I think we're in total flux at the moment. So taking a step back, moral economy comes out of work on peasant societies, which tell us several things. First of all, that in peasant societies, you probably don't rip each other off because you're going to live in that community for a long time. And so the moral consequences, the social consequences of stealing or lying or misleading each other are very stiff. Second thing we know about peasant societies was that peasant uprisings occurred when change occurred in the arrangements that existed between landowners and serfs. And then when that occurred, especially when it's done in a preemptive way, it changes the lifestyle without seeking some sort of dialogue about it. That's when people rose. Even if this change was an improvement in the quality of their lives, there would often be a backlash because it changed established practices. So what we're seeing is right now there's enormous flux in the media landscape on both sides. So corporations are exerting copyright control far more extensively than they've ever done before. The world moving from a world where mixtapes are normal parts of listening to music to a world where file sharing is prohibited is a shift in the status of the relationships. At the same time, they're threatened by the rise of participatory culture and the ability of consumers to spread information and be part of the mediascape in a new way. So we're in a period of profound transition. Almost everyone involved believes, I think, our culture will become more participatory at the end of this process. Well, we don't agree on the terms of participation. And struggles over intellectual property become the central battleground by which we resort through what the moral economy is going to be.
But what does that mean, the moral economy, in the media landscape today?
Well, I think it's the question is, what constitutes stealing, for example? What constitutes lying? What constitutes misleading people? What constitutes damaging the media environment? I don't think you get very much agreement within an individual company today about that, let alone between companies and consumers or between government and citizens. These are things we are torn apart about because the change has occurred so fast. We haven't sorted through what the new arrangements need to be. And sooner or later, there's going to be a new equilibrium that emerges, and it will have a moral and social dimension. In an age of bloggers, we have the ability to hold companies accountable in a way that was never possible before. We can force them to make good on their agreements in a different way because we can damage them publicly through our use of shame, through our use of negative publicity, through brand communities and fan communities. They're mechanisms, collective bargaining mechanisms on the side of consumers and participants that didn't exist before. And so the question is, can we create some space where we really work through what the future of those relationships look like?
You've written that there's a need for newcomers to the world of citizen journalism, to citizen bloggers. There's a need for them to have a sense of judgment about what is appropriate and what isn't appropriate to be published. What do you see the moral landscape is at the moment when we look at that issue of the absent editor, the missing gatekeeper?
Well, I mean, I think it is a product. One of the things I've been looking at lately is high school journalism. And Howard Gardner at Harvard and the Good Works Project talks about the role high school journalism played in teaching journalistic ethics to future professionals. You turn from that to LiveJournal, and LiveJournal, like a third of to half of the participants on LiveJournal, depending on which study you look at, are teenagers, same age as those high school journalists. They're putting stuff out there with no adults around them giving them any advice, any guidance, any understanding of the issues that are involved. Some of what they're writing is really powerful stuff that changes the way we think about what it is to be a teenager in America. And I know respect some of it is malicious. It's cyberbullying. It's fraud and hoaxes. It's pranks. It's stupidity. It's all the stuff we did in high school. But to create a world where kids have access to the power of a global circulation system, and no one is talking to them about their ethical responsibilities, seems to be a serious challenge. And if we're going to hold at bay those efforts to regulate youth voice, which I, as someone who supports politics participation, thinks we've got to do, if we've got to fight back on things like the Deleting Online Predators Act and other attempts by adults to regulate youth civic engagement, then we have to embed in those young people a sense of their own responsibility, a sense of what they write has real-world consequences. And so part of what we're doing here at MIT around new media literacies is to try to create tools that teachers and after-school programs and teenagers by themselves can use to acquire reflective practices around media ethics, to require mental habits that encourage them to think about the choices they're making as media producers and the potential social, political, cultural consequences of those choices.